Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue online, edleysbbq.com. Each week at this time, we say hello to John Feinstein of the Washington Post, best-selling author. John, hope you're doing well.
Doing fine, Jonathan. Thanks for asking. I hope you guys are all doing well, too. I'm sure it's probably a little bit warm down there as it is here.
Same here. I'm curious to let's start here. I'm curious to get your thoughts on the NCAA and the Power Five. And if a decade from now, let's say maybe 5 years from now, we look back on 2020 and point to this as the start of the split between the Power Five and the NCAA as we know it.
Well, you know what's interesting, Jonathan? The Power Five has been on its own in football for a long time now. The NCAA has no involvement in the college football playoff or in anything the Power Five conferences do. The Power Five plus Notre Dame have been making up their own rules for, 10 years now. The BCS was run independent of the NCAA. Mark Emmert has no say in what they do. There is, even though technically the other six Division I conferences are part of the college football playoff, they have as much chance to get into the college football playoff as I have of getting into the Masters. So I think there's no question the NCAA is slowly crumbling before our eyes. I think what we are going to see is something that Mike Krzyzewski suggested to me 20 years ago, which is three separate groups running college athletics. I think you'll have a division for the Power Five football schools that will probably include everybody else, but there'll be a clearer separation. We won't pretend that UCF or any other non-Power Five school might go undefeated and have a chance to make the playoffs, because they won't. And then there'll be a separate division for college basketball, which is already happening even as we speak. I think I mentioned to you guys last week that there is an adjunct ad hoc committee that Dan Gavitt, who runs the NCAA tournament for the NCAA, is chairing right now with a bunch of important D1 coaches trying to make decisions on how to proceed for the next college football season. I wouldn't be at all shocked to see a college basketball division with someone like Dan Gavitt as the commissioner. And then there'll be a non-revenue division. Because as I've said many times before, and I think you guys would agree, to try to make a rule book that is for Alabama football, Tennessee football, any of the Power Five football schools or power basketball schools that has the same rules as for, you know, Quinnipiac field hockey, or Princeton swimming, I mean, take your pick, is ridiculous. They're completely different in the way they're run, in the money they have, in what's at stake. And I think we will come to that. I think we are. We've been coming to that for years. And probably what's going on now will eventually put all of this over the top.
So, John, you've got the separate issues with NCAA and the big conferences, and then each big conference has their own set of issues also, and how they're going to be governed and how they're going to move forward. And now the Pac-12 has another issue with what's being claimed. I think it's over 400, hundreds of players that are saying they're behind this movement to possibly boycott the season if their demands with health, safety, social justice, they're not met with the Pac-12. What do you make of this move by the players? What do you think happens now with the Pac-12 and their response?
Well, there's a couple layers here, Chad. I think, first of all, just within the Pac-12, Larry Scott is going to finally have to earn his money here as commissioner because they can't just respond and say, oh, yeah, sure, we hear you. We'll do the best we can. They're going to have to do something. They're going to have to sit down with these athletes and show them how they're going to try to keep them safe. You know, there are all sorts of stories coming out, not just in the Pac-12, but all over the country, about football players who have been on campus who aren't being kept socially distanced properly, who aren't getting proper testing. As we get closer to the season, when teams, if there are games, are going to be interacting with one another, playing football. We all know that football is, by definition, a contact sport, probably the contact sport, although basketball and hockey are contact sports too, for sure, that it's going to get harder and harder. And then there are, of course, the social justice issues that are important to most college football athletes at the highest level. I think 70% of them are minorities. And so I wouldn't be surprised. The second layer of this isn't just how Larry Scott and the Pac-12 deal with the players, but if the players in the other major conferences don't look up and say, hey, you know what? They're right. We need more protection. We need more serious protocols. We want to be able to speak out more on social justice. We want some of the money that these schools are and conferences are making to go to social justice issues. We want to speed up the NIL issue that's been ongoing for a while now. I wouldn't be at all shocked if we don't hear in the next week or two, as we get closer to the season, more of the major conference athletes coming forward and doing and saying some of the same things the Pac-12 conference athletes are saying.
As I smash my elbow, how do you think Washington State reacting to this, where kids apparently who've tweeted that they're part of this movement are being told to empty out their lockers?
Yeah, I think, again, that's where Paul Larry Scott has to get involved right away and has to speak to the president of Washington State and the AD and Nick Rolovich, the coach. Nick Rolovich has no history at Washington State as the head coach. He just took over. So he doesn't have anything to fall back on with the school to say, hey, look, I won you this many games. I made you this much money. I got you to this many bowls. Unless he comes out very quickly and apologizes and shows, again, tangibly that he's going to go back in the other direction, I think he could lose his job without ever coaching a game in the current climate.
So baseball and where we are right now. Now the Cardinals affected. Of course, that affects more games. From a threat level perspective, John, how concerned are you for the future of this season? Or do you think, like Rob Manfred said, there's no real danger to the season right now and they're just going to forge ahead?
Chad, if Rob Manfred tells me the sun's going to rise in the east tomorrow, I'm going to check the western horizon. I don't trust him to get anything right. He hasn't gotten anything right. He mishandled the Astros situation. He mishandled the situation with the negotiations to get back on the field. He probably, and it should have, made more of an effort to convince the players to play in bubbles the way the NBA and the NHL are doing. They would have needed four or five of them, and it would have been difficult. I get that. But he probably should have made more effort there rather than, you know, hiding behind the owners who wanted to try to squeeze every dollar they could out of the players. And now, did you see his quote the other day when the issue came up? And he said, I'm not a quitter. Now, what in the hell does he being a quitter or not being a quitter have to do with how you deal with a pandemic? We're talking health here. We're not talking showing your toughness. We're not talking playing through an injury or anything like that. And he says, I'm not a quitter. He's irrelevant. The health of the players is the only thing that can make decisions here. And the first 10 days have not been encouraging. I think, Chad, this week is critical. If they can get through this week without any more outbreaks, without any other teams having to shut down, I think they can keep things under control. The Marlins didn't have any negatives in the last 24 hours. The Cardinals are still dealing with this. But if this week produces another team or two with positive tests, with games having to be canceled, I'm not sure they're going to get to the end of the season.
John Feinstein from the Washington Post is our guest on the Midday 180. John, I got to ask you about your Mets and Yoenis Cespedes. What a weird story. Just completely bolts from an Atlanta hotel room, doesn't tell the team, doesn't tell anyone, and then later explains that he's leaving because he's done with the season because of COVID-19 concerns.
Yeah. Chad, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I was watching the game yesterday because I am a masochist, so I watch Met games. And early in the game, Gary Cohen made the announcement that Cespedes hadn't shown up at the ballpark. They didn't know where he was. He wasn't answering his cell phone. I mean, it sounded a little bit scary, like something had honestly gone wrong. And then they said, well, we still don't know where he is, but we don't fear for his safety. And as Gary again said, nobody knows what the heck that means. And then after the game, they announced that his agent had called Brody Van Wagenen, agent to agent, to say that he was opting out. And it's not just weird. It's incredibly selfish. I mean, again, I understand a player opting out because of fear of COVID-19. I totally get that. But if you're thinking about it, which he must have been on Saturday at the latest, don't you go talk to your manager, to your general manager. Don't you give them a heads up. You just pack up your hotel room and leave on Sunday morning without saying anything to the team, leaving your teammates wondering what the heck's going on. If I'm the Mets, he never plays for me again. He never plays for me again. Not because he opted out, but because of the way he opted out.
John Feinstein with us on the Midday 180.
First golf major coming up here in some time. I think it's probably the most major thing since COVID. Golf's played out pretty well, I think we'd all agree, since this thing. How do you anticipate this playing out? And who do you feel like's in prime position maybe to lift the first big trophy?
Well, Paul, I think you're right. First of all, this is the most major event we've had since everything was shut down by the COVID in March. Harding Park is an outstanding golf course. It's a great venue for a major. It's a big hitters park. So if you're looking at favorites, you're going to start at least with guys who hit it far: Brooks Koepka, Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, Bryson DeChambeau, guys like that. But we all know that the one thing that's almost certain about a major is that nothing is certain, that there'll be somebody on that leaderboard on Sunday who nobody was talking about on Thursday morning. Obviously Tiger Woods is playing, and you never count him out because he's Tiger Woods, even though he's only played once since the COVID shut golf down back in March. I think that has a lot to do with his back. It's still not 100% and probably never will be. But you never count him out. I think somebody asked me yesterday if there should be some kind of asterisk next to the winner's name because they're playing with no fans. I couldn't disagree with that more. I think everybody's going to be playing under the same conditions. Whomever wins is going to have to reach within himself on Sunday because there'll be no crowds to cheer him on. There'll be no cheers when you make a big putt. It'll be different. There's no question. But the pressure will be the same. The pressure will be the same because the major championship's at stake. And I think it'll be a fascinating week, and I'm looking forward to it.
No asterisk either if Koepka wins it and goes for the three-peat at the PGA Championship. You don't see that. That's been through, since the 50s or 60s since we last saw that happen. Certainly that's going down in the history books, and not because there were no fans there.
Absolutely right, Jonathan. And actually, the last time somebody won three PGAs in a row was Walter Hagen, who won four in a row in the 1920s. So we're talking almost 100 years ago since it happened at a PGA. And so if Koepka does pull it off, and he played well until the last couple holes in Memphis over the weekend, seems to be healthy. He's had knee issues, as you know, then it would be an extraordinary achievement. And seems to be rounding into form just in time.
What is he like behind the scenes? I feel like he's done more interviews in the last year than what I expected or what I've seen from him in the past. I don't know if that's good or bad. When I see him, though, I do find him interesting. Although I remember having a conversation with you maybe a year, 2 years ago about him, where it doesn't just have he's very quiet behind the scenes. Maybe I was almost going to say unlikable, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
No, not at all. I'm pretty sure what I would have told you then is what I'll tell you now is I've always liked him. I first sat down with him one-on-one back in 2015 when he was just coming on the tour full-time, but was clearly headed in the direction of being a star. And I interviewed him because I was working on my Ryder Cup book for 2016 and thought he was going to be on the team a year later, and he was. And I loved his attitude. He was trying to make the President's Cup team for 2015 at that point. And the only reason he wasn't going to be on the team was because he'd been playing in Europe in 2014 and thus didn't get any points that year. And a lot of people thought he should be a captain's pick. And he said, you know what, if they don't pick me, it's no big deal. I'm going to be on the Ryder Cup team next year, and I'm going to play on lots of President's Cup and Ryder Cup teams. And he was, of course, 100% right about it. He's a guy who takes what he does very seriously, but doesn't take himself very seriously. A lot of golfers, a lot of athletes, take both themselves and what they do seriously. Brooks isn't like that. He can make fun of himself. He takes, as I said, when he's out there on the golf course, he's very serious about it. And I love watching him play. I love his game. And I'd be thrilled if he won a third straight.
John Feinstein joins us on Mondays as we hit some of the national headlines from across the country. John, thank you as always, and we'll do it again next week.
My pleasure, guys. Look forward to it. Thanks.